Okay, the, what are we? The Senate State and Local Government Committee will reconvene. It's still Wednesday, March 19th. Senator Hayden.
Good. Thank you, Madam Chair. I have Senate File 2378. It is a very easy and quick bill. It just it ensures that four councils, the American Indian Advisory Council, the Alcohol and Other Drug Advisory Council, the Advisory Committee on the Needs of Persons with Traumatic Brain Injury, and the American Indian Child Welfare Council, we remove their sunset date and have them continue to meet. They've been doing good work. I have Mr. Hartford from DHS who can just tell us a little bit about the great work that they do, and then we can move forward, Madam Chair.
Mr. Hartford, thank you. Welcome.
Good evening. I'm Dave Hartford, Assistant Commissioner for DHS Chemical and Mental Health Services. And again, as Senator Hayden was saying, these four committees are active, important advisory committees to the work of DHS, each one of them providing a little bit different functions. Again, the American Indian Advisory Council, this committee put on a summit this last year on American Indian substance abuse issues. The Citizens Advisory Council on Substance Abuse provides input for our federal block grant, actively provides input on policy. American Indian Child Welfare Advisory Council, again, numerous issues regarding our Native American communities with issues around child welfare. This is an active group. And lastly, our Advisory Committee for Persons with Traumatic Brain Injury, helping DHS identify service gaps. All of these committees are, again, active and providing input to DHS.
Okay, thank you. Senator Hayden, Senator Sharon wants to include this in her omnibus policy bill. So we can just send it to the floor, and she'll just include it, I guess.
Sounds good to me, Madam
Chair. That sounds fine?
Absolutely.
Because I don't see the sense in sending it back to her.
No, we should send it to the floor.
Send it to the floor, right. And it's always nice to have more bills on the floor anyway.
That's right.
Never know. any questions from members of the committee? Anyone else in the audience want to testify? Okay, then Senator Hayden.
Madam Chair, I move Senate File 2378 to pass and be referred to the floor.
All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
And Senator Schmidt.
All right, Madam Chair and committee, it's good to be back in front of you tonight. We have two bills, I believe, on your agenda here. And the first one is our omnibus game and fish policy bill coming straight from full committee on energy and environment. And thanks for fitting us into your agenda tonight. Senate File 2227 has two components. First of all, it's much of it is technical language proposed to us by Department of Natural Resources, getting it a number of technical fixes, and also in general trying to promote hunting and fishing recreation in Minnesota, opportunities for youth and adults alike. We also have a number of bills that were brought to us by members of the Game and Fish Subcommittee and other members of the legislature here or the Senate. And I could run through highlights of the bill if you'd like, but we do have a couple of key elements here for member bills regarding recreational shooting clubs and appropriation from the Game and Fish Fund for opportunities in Senator Saxog's district. Also, a crossbow provision that allows individuals over the age of 60 to take deer, bear, and turkey and rough fish by crossbow during their respective archery seasons. Also, Senator Tomasoni brought to us a contest with a raffle that allows organizations that are licensed to conduct raffles to hold a raffle in conjunction with a contest for deer that are legally taken and tagged. And also a bill that Senator Hoffman brought to us regarding the legal take size for muskies from 48 inches up to 55 inches. And then also we have a familiar provision that was in this bill last year regarding cattail removal in Loring Park that Senator Dibble brought to us. And then also a study that we're asking DNR to commission regarding the bobwhite quail population in southeastern Minnesota. I could have someone from DNR speak to a number of the technical aspects of this bill if you'd like. I know there's a very narrow jurisdiction here the committee has over this bill, and if you'd like to focus in on that, I'd be happy to address that as well.
I think what we're mostly just concerned about is Section 50, which is the rulemaking section. That's right. What's in our jurisdiction. So if you just want to...
You know, I would. This is coming from the DNR's technical bill, and I'd ask them to speak to that if they could.
Madam Chair and members, Bob Meyer couldn't be with us tonight. I'm Ed Bogus, Director of Fish and Wildlife from...
I thought you didn't look like Bob. It's Ed...
He would be happy
Ed
to...
Ed Bogus?
Ed Bogus, B-O-G-G-E-S-S.
Okay, Mr. Bogus.
And I'm the Director of Fish and Wildlife for DNR, and there actually are a few sections in the bill that relate to rulemaking that I think is the reason the bill is probably primarily here. It's Section 50 relates to snowmobile operations, and that also relates back to Section 5 of the bill on line 3.26. And if you look on page 3.26, what we're proposing to do here, actually in Sections 4 and 5, is make the snowmobile operation during the deer season consistent with off-highway vehicle operation during the deer season. So you can see that Section 5 refers back to the changes made in Section 4 and also says as done under rules made by the commissioner, and then that's in Section 50. So it's basically making the change on Section 4 and 5, and then Section 50 allows us to use the good cause exemption to go in and make our rules consistent with the statutory changes made earlier in the bill. And then also Sections 48 and 49 have some rulemaking references. Section 48, this bill as part of the unsession consolidates and repeals a lot of the rulemaking for individual small game species and consolidates that all into one section of statute. So in the repealers, you'll see a number of sections that allow us to do rules by species being removed, and then they're consolidated in this bill into one section. But Section 48 is one area where the limits actually have never been established in rule. They were established in statute. We're proposing to repeal that statute as part of that consolidation, and so Section 48 would allow us to transfer that statutory limit for gray partridge or Hungarian partridge into rule using the good cause exemption. And then Section 49, Senator Schmidt already referenced on muskellunge minimum size. It establishes a new minimum size for muskellunge and requires or gives the commissioner the authority then to use the good cause exemption to make the rules consistent. And the good cause exemption, I don't know how often comes before your committee, but we've used it fairly frequently in DNR in recent years to make rules consistent with changes specified by the legislature. It's allowed when changing the rules is just to achieve the legislative intent without any need for interpretation.
Any questions? We're good. Anybody else in the audience who wants to testify? All right, then, Senator Scalzi?
Yes.
All right, Senator Scalzi moves that Senate File 2227.
Madam Chair, it's off to Judiciary next.
Okay, and be recommended to pass and sent to the Committee on Judiciary. As I said, we're all committee, all bills end up. I thought we were the last stop. But all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. All right, thank you very much, Senator Schmidt. Now you're...
All right,
2276.
We have a second bill here, and it may be just as efficient. This is Senate File 2276. This is an unsession cleanup bill, if you will, from Pollution Control Agency. And this is a bill that makes a number of mostly non-controversial, if not entirely non-controversial, changes as follows. It modifies the rule notice requirements to municipalities for classification of water rule changes and modifies the septic system tank fee submission deadline requirements. Imposes a sunset date for the Advisory Council on Water Supply Systems and Wastewater Treatment Facilities. It makes changes in specified PCA rulemaking requirements and eliminates a sunset date on small business air quality compliance assistance. With that said, I'd like to hear some testimony here from PCA, if we could.
Commissioner Kadaka.
Madam Chair and committee members, thank you for the time, and thank you, Senator Schmidt, for authoring the bill. As mentioned, this is real quick, two of our advisory committees as a joint House and Senate effort this summer to look at advisory committees, the wastewater and water supply operators. Advisory committee, we're asking in Section 2 to be extended another 5 years. They came up with a good idea on water, wastewater operator certification program to make it easier for smaller communities to keep on and train their employees, so we think they do good work and would like to keep them along. And same with the Small Business Air Quality Compliance Assistance Advisory Program. It is a in Section 4, it is a federal requirement, so not having it would put us in some conflict with the feds. Then the other two items, I just kind of bucketed them, are rules, because these are items that you'll see again and on the next bill. First one is dealing with rule notices for water quality standards. All we're asking the agency to be able to do is when a specific change in rule affects a specific city, that's when we notify them directly. If it is a global issue, we have a list server and we contact the League of Minnesota Cities, Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities, and on that list server we have 1,800 people signed up for that notice. So we believe that it's well advised or advertised change. And then Section 3 is a dealing with the SONAR, the Statement of Need and Reasonableness, when it's specific to MPCA rules, dealing with water and air standards. What we're doing is just clarifying that we do an assessment and analysis of differences between neighboring and EPA states that are relevant. Otherwise, it becomes a much larger laundry list of states to compare to. There are certain cases where we may want to compare to Illinois if it's an air quality standard and we're dealing with non-attainment because they're in non-attainment versus a water quality standard where we may compare it to other states. We want to make sure it's to relevant states and not just a laundry list of that may not be important to the rule.
Okay. Any questions? Senator Dahl.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I believe that we do not have that bill on this side of the table or the next one. So I think that
the 2276?
Correct.
I agree with you.
And your bill, the next one coming up.
The next
up, I don't
one, 2467. Well,
so I'm sure there's
actually
a pile
the
somewhere.
Delete all is more important for that one. Okay, does everyone not have it?
I didn't either, but Alice did, so I borrowed her.
Okay. We had a lot of bills here tonight. East side. Now you can stop looking. I don't think you have to pass them out. People aren't here because we're going to be done soon. Okay. Any questions that you want them to go over from this bill?
Chair.
2276, Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could you just lay out first, Commissioner, the rulemaking changes that are in here? You said some changes made to rulemaking requirements. I'd like to know what those are, please.
Commissioner?
Madam Chair and committee members, the first one is Section 1, deals with rule notification, and these are specific to MPCA and rulemaking that is done under our purview. This deals with notification. What we'd like to do is change this so that when we do a water quality standard, we do water quality standards usually for the whole state, that we use our current process of our contact list for folks who have signed up, but also contact the large groups such as Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities, League of Minnesota Cities, to make sure we get a blanket coverage of folks. Of the 1,800 people signed up for our listserv, many of them are city folks. When it specifically impacts a stretch of a body of water, say Eagle Lake or Bear Creek, and it's your city's along that side, we will contact you directly. So if it's specifically affecting you, we're contacting you directly, and that's the change that we're asking for there. Section 3 is the other one dealing with rulemaking, and this regards standards. During the SONAR, the Statement of Need and Reasonableness, the Pollution Control Agency, under this language, whether it's an air or water standard, what we would do is provide assessment and a different analysis compared to other states that are relevant that are either neighboring Minnesota or within the same EPA Region 5, and that includes everything from Minnesota, Wisconsin, Illinois, Michigan, Indiana, and Ohio to compare what our standards are done at that time.
Thank you.
Any just more discussion, more questions? More relevant if you pass out the amendment, actually.
And Madam Chair, I think the approach with this bill is not to pass it on, but rather to lay it over and possibly amend it onto a broader bill, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay. Anyone in the audience wants to testify on this bill, 2276? Okay.
Madam Chair.
Oh, I'm sorry. Senator Anderson. Thank you,
Madam Chair. Commissioner, on Section 4, it says the council is required by federal law and does not expire. That's new language. Was there an expiration date that we had? Was there some reason that we had to have that in there, or was there information there that we're not aware of? I don't see anything else that says there was or wasn't.
Commissioner Kadalka?
Madam Chair and committee members, under Chapter 15, there's a blanket sunset in 2009 for various advisory committees that they would sunset. And so that's something that the House and Senate worked on this year. What we're doing is just making sure our recommendation is that this is one that's kept. I believe there are other bills that are working its way through the system and on the way to the committee here on advisory committees where this is that specific section that sunset is being repealed potentially. So that under current law, this would disappear, and we would like it not to, but there are other bills that are also trying to do that too.
Any more discussion? Did anyone want to testify on 2276? All right, then Senator Dahl moves that. Oh, no, we're going to lay this over. Yeah. Okay, so this bill will be temporarily laid over.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and committee.
All right. Thank you. Senator Scalzi, do you want a chair?
Okay.
Thought I got my shot tonight.
Right, I did that last year. We'll come up with some votes. Members, there is a delete all amendment, the A14, and I hope that this amendment was available for the stakeholders so they know what's coming, that there were several changes made in the amendment.
And Senator Pappas, is this your first stop with this?
Yeah, this is an author's.
So this is an author's amendment. You'd like to get in the shape that you would like to have it. So are there any questions regarding that? If not those, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Same sign? Motion carries. Senator Pappas.
Members, this is the governor's and the cross-agency group's rule reform proposal, and it is 2467.
Okay.
Make sure everyone has the 2467, and we just did the A14 delete all amendment. And I think there also were some handouts that were passed out.
Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So there was a cross-agency work group that is proposing several changes to the rulemaking process. The desire is to make the process shorter and more efficient while preserving public participation and independent legal review. And to go to explain this, I have Commissioner Stein.
So, Commissioner, would you give your name for the record and proceed, please?
Absolutely. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Senator Pappas, for authoring the bill. My name is John Link Stein. I'm the Commissioner of the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. My career in state government goes back 35 years. I drew the straw among commissioners. In terms of having worked on lots of rules from lots of different agency perspectives, I worked for 25 years at the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources and then 6 years at the Minnesota Department of Health, and now the last 3 years at the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. My background is in water regulation and health management, as well as now pollution control, so largely environmental kinds of issues. This rulemaking proposal, though, is the section of the statute that applies to all rulemaking across state government. And just quickly, for those of you who have thought about rules before, you know that the rules do not change policy. Policy is set by legislation in the state. The rules implement legislative policy. So often we hear about rulemaking as beyond certain limits, but we focus on the policy that the legislature sets, and then we implement that through rules. And rules help us take persons and businesses and other parties that are subject to state law and put them through the programs and procedures that then treat people fairly and equitably in terms of getting results. The rulemaking bill before you today, Senate File 2467, is intended to streamline and make more efficient the rulemaking process. There are similar provisions in the bill that will protect the public's interest to be heard and to have the opportunity to request a public hearing on rulemaking provisions. I am going to talk about the scope of rulemaking is one of the problems that we currently encounter across state government. Because the rulemaking process can take so much time, it is often well over 16 to 18 months to accomplish some very straightforward amendments to rules, such as clarifications of existing terms and other provisions that could be more simply handled through a more efficient process. That's why this is a part of the Governor Dayton's unsession proposal, is to make government more straightforward and easier for the citizens of the state to understand and utilize. There are three sections of the bill I just want to focus on. The vast majority of the language that's in this bill is reorganizing and making the language more efficient. I want to talk about Section 12 of the bill, which modifies the statement of need and reasonableness provisions of law. The statement of need and reasonableness is where agencies explain the rationale for their rules, how it is needed, and how it is reasonable. The current provisions of law require that statement, but then add 8 specific requirements that must be described in detail regardless of the scope of the rule. The proposed language streamlines and makes that language more straightforward and requires an assessment of the need and the reasonableness of the law, who is impacted by the rule, and moves quickly on to make the process more efficient. Section 21 of the bill creates a fourth process for rulemaking. There are currently 3 processes in the bill, and those 3 remain, and we add a fourth category, which is a provision that allows for rules that are likely non-controversial to move quickly through the process and be enacted so that there's conformity to federal law, so that there is new and updated terminology adopted more effectively. The last section, which actually occurs, the last change I'll focus on is across the bill there is a modification to change the threshold from 25 signatures to request a public hearing on a set of rules to 100 signatures and additional clarifications, and that occurs across the bill. And, Madam Chair, with that, I'll answer any questions.
And I believe members have this chart that was passed out that explains the 4 different processes, and it can often take them several months, like 6 to 9 months, to promulgate a rule that really isn't even controversial, just because the approach is so cumbersome. So the fourth approach, likely no controversy, would say that, but if we try to expedite that process while retaining public comment, but if 100 people said that, yes, we don't agree with the department, that we think this is controversial, then they're going to go to the hearing that requires the SONAR, the Statement of Need and Reasonableness. So that's really the way to try to streamline some of this process.
So, Senator Pappas, would you prefer to take questions as the testifiers go through, because you have quite a list of testifiers, or would you rather wait until their testimony is completed and then take questions?
Unless there are any quick questions right now, I think we should just proceed to the testimony, and then members will be able to, respond to what some of the testifiers say and have Commissioner Stein also respond.
Thank you. So the next testifier in the list is Chris Iden, the Deputy Commissioner of Department of Labor and Industry. Please give your name for the tape and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Chris Iden. I'm Deputy Commissioner at the Department of Labor and Industry. And I just want to add one point to what Commissioner Stein had said, and that is the importance of streamlining and simplifying the process for non-controversial rules. The Department of Labor and Industry adopts a lot of rules, and very few people know that because most of them are non-controversial. We adopt building codes, including elevator codes, accessibility codes, and right now we're required to go through the very cumbersome process, the one-size-fits-all that currently exists. And these amendments would create a process, a streamlined process for non-controversial rules, and it would just make state government operate more smoothly and allow us to better use our resources. So I suggest and hope that you will support this bill.
Thank you for your testimony. The next one on the list is Catherine Neuschler. No? Somebody else in. So give us your name for the for the tape, please.
Madam Chair, my name is Catherine Neuschler. I'm the supervisor of the MPCA Rules Unit, and I'm basically just here to answer questions as the committee has them as we proceed through the evening. Thank you.
Thank you. Craig Johnson is here as well. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Craig Johnson with the League of Minnesota Cities. And I unfortunately am here to raise significant concerns with Senate File 2467. The number of agencies that have rule writing authority is very, very broad. This affects all of them. There are a couple here tonight that are talking, but it affects a great number of state agencies, any who are given the authority to do essentially legislating outside of the legislative process. So that's why this is a big deal to many of us, because this is a process that is done outside of these rooms. It's done in a process that it requires some different standards because of that. And one of those that I think is the biggest part of this that is our concern is the statement of need and reasonableness. It's a very carefully done standard. This, when I started doing environmental work back in the in 1990, we would frequently see agency rules coming forward that had very, very minimal statements of need and reasonableness. Simply said that the agency had been given that authority by the state and they had used their best professional judgment, and there would be a ballpark number of what it would cost people, and you'd have to go forward from there. And I think what's very important for members to recognize is that a process for rule writing has specific legal requirements for how you can get a change made to what's a draft rule. That's very, very different. You actually have to, once you're past getting the statement of need and reasonableness done and the public comment on all of those parts of it, once it's in front of the administrative law judge, you now have to demonstrate factual inadequacies and a couple of other measures, or there won't be a change to those rules. And the agencies get tremendous professional discretion in how they do that. So it's why over the years, and these requirements that are being eliminated for the sonar in this bill were not in place in 1990. They were added since then. Senator Betzold spent many years working on developing those requirements. And that's why they were added, was to make sure the comment about making sure government is more straightforward and easier to understand. It was to make sure when an agency came forward with a rule that it was laid out very, very clearly for everyone who might be affected by it that, yes, this does affect you. Here's what it is likely to cost you. Here's why it is still a needed and reasonable regulation for the state to have. And then they go out into laying out what that new requirement would be and how you have to meet it. These changes are not about making it more straightforward. They're about making it much simpler for the state to get rules adopted and to actually reduce the amount of information that's in front of the public before that process starts. There are a number of other specific concerns that I could go through, Madam Chair, but I honestly would prefer to let some other folks testify on this and really just point out that this is a major, major set of changes to a set of legislative boundaries for how legislative work happens outside of this body that took many, many years to craft and make into a system that was functioning. And while there is absolutely a reason to try and streamline that in places where it is a non-controversial issue, we don't think the public having to try and go from a limited base of information with a small sonar and decide whether or not they want to go through the process of trying to get 100 signatures and dragging it back to a different process is the right way to do that. We think the agency should put that information forward from the start, and then we can decide what kind of process goes from there. And some of them might be very appropriately done in a shorter process, but we don't think this is the solution to that, just very frankly. And there are so many ways that this affects a city government, the many types of rules we have to deal with, whether it's, you know, roads, building codes, electrical codes, plumbing codes, environmental regulations, all of these things, shoreland ordinances, you know, wells, everything is done in rule on those programs, and we would have to be really monitoring much differently than we do now to make sure we're not missing important things and important impacts. So we would really prefer that this had been done in a process where all of those folks affected were brought in, worked with to decide what types of rules really make sense to move a little more quickly, and then come up with a plan for how we would do that, rather than the first time we saw this language was the afternoon of the day before session, and it was a draft. The bill hadn't been introduced yet. So it was very, very challenging for us. The delete all in front of you, we got, you know, this afternoon while we were testifying in other hearings. So this is a very complex issue, and we think it really deserves serious consideration, and we do appreciate the need for the state to see some streamlining, but this is being done very quickly.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. And given the people that I see in the room, I think we'll have a good, strong debate related to this. Did you have any comments, Senator Pappas, before we go to the next?
No, I think we should get some more of concerns on the table, and then I'll ask the agency people to respond.
Thank you. And I see Mr. Quillis is here. Please
Madam
state
Chair,
your name for the
members
tape.
Of the committee. My name is Tony Quillis. I'm the director of director of environmental policy at the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. Thank you for the time. And I wanted to echo a lot of what Mr. Johnson said, and thank Senator Pappas for getting the interested parties together to try and work through this. But as Mr. Johnson has stated, this is far-reaching, and specifically to the Chamber of Commerce. If you look at the Department of Labor and Industry, if you look at the Department of Agriculture, specifically the Pollution Control Agency, and the rulemaking dockets that those folks have, it is very concerning to us when we go through, specifically, as Mr. Johnson pointed out, the statement of need and reasonableness. And what is not controversial today, 2 or 3 years down the line, might be very controversial. And so we like to have the ability to be able to go back and look at those sonars to see what the thought process was and how we get there. And like I said, they might not be controversial now, but they could be controversial in the future. And so we just wanted to point some of these out, some of the concerns. There's some additional ones that we talk about with the legislative notification. I think Section 9 talks about identifying and letting, as much as some of the chairs, I'm sure, of the committees don't like books of paper coming in, but I think that involving the legislature in the process and letting the chairs of the appropriate committees know about what's going on. I understand we want to streamline. Nobody's led the charge more than the chamber to try and streamline and go through and find efficiencies in the system. And I thank the Pollution Control Agency and Commissioner Stein and Commissioner Landwehr at the DNR for helping us. As a matter of fact, Senator Scalzi, we're going to try and move that issue forward again this year. But there are times where we get through, and as Mr. Johnson said, we're trying to process what we've got here in front of us. But we just want to have some pause, and we have some concern there, and I just wanted to let the committee know about that.
Thank you for your testimony. And the next one I see that's here on the list, and we will open it up then for further questions and comments by other members that are here tonight. But Anna Lee Garlitz, did you want to come up and testify?
And while she's coming up, I did want to just make a short comment, and that really the goal is not to not provide the public with adequate information, but to provide, not overload the public with too much information, provide the public with information that's relevant to the rule. So making the sonar shorter, easier to read, and, like I said, more relevant to the specific rule, to try to make it more understandable. That's really the attempt, not to escape public scrutiny at all.
Thank you, Senator Pappas. Ms. Garlitz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Anna Lee Garlitz, and I'm with the Association of Minnesota Counties. I would like to echo some of the comments made by Mr. Quillis and Mr. Johnson. As Mr. Johnson noted, as with cities, counties are also impacted across a wide variety of services that we're required, that we're mandated through rule to offer and to carry out on behalf of the state. It ranges from corrections to environmental rules, such as septic systems, shoreland, any number of things, to transportation, and so on. As the rules go forward, counties are pulled in, and we are viewed as partners, and something that we find important and a discussion that we've actually had in the past is adding questions to the SONAR. I'm concerned about deleting the existing questions that are in the SONAR. And in fact, some of the discussions that we've had amongst county staff and county commissioners is how can we work with the agencies more to have them view us if counties are going to be tasked to carry out the rules. We need to be viewed as co-regulators and have even more input and more thought to how this these changes impact local governments in terms of administration, enforcement, and cost that's being added via the rule. So those are some concerns that I had in specific to the SONAR. Also, increasing the number of signatures up to 100. There are 87 counties, and if that's one of my concerns, is rounding up a number of official letters from a county. I have 87. I don't have 100 that I can go to. So that is one of the other concerns that I have.
That's not 100 counties. That's 100 people.
And so, Madam Chair, and Senator Pappas, often when county boards will, each commissioner will not necessarily send their own letter. They will send it as a county board. And so my concern is that while one administration might look at that and say, okay, that's five commissioners or seven commissioners that are signed on to that letter, will that be viewed? How will that be viewed in the future? Will that be viewed as one letter or will that be viewed as five or seven going forward? The county will often send one letter signed by the board chair, perhaps. So just making sure that every county understands how they're going to send these comments in or how a staff person, sometimes in some cases a county may task a staff person, the septic system staff person, to send comments in on the septic system rule. And that one staff person, not everybody in the department or all the county commissioners or everybody in the county employees will sign on the letter. So that's one of the concerns that I have with raising that to 100 if a county does have concerns about a particular rulemaking.
Thank you, Ms. Garlitz.
And we appreciate the need for streamlining, but we do want some more discussion, and perhaps some other people will have some other points that local governments, that counties will also agree with. So I will end my testimony there and let some others make some points.
Thank you. The next person on the list is Ramey Stone. Is that person here? Please give your name and your title. I'm not sure what those acronyms mean, so please tell us what that is.
The acronyms, that's not how we function in this building. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Ramey Stone. I'm Executive Vice President of the Builders Association of Minnesota. Thank you for giving me a few moments today to echo, well, I won't echo some of the concerns. I'll add a few more things from a home builder's perspective. As you know, we are regulated both by the Department of Labor and Industry, by DEED, by the MPCA, by the DNR. We have a lot of interest in rulemaking activities that go on at the state. And as you know, passing a bill is supposed to be a difficult thing. It's a long, tedious, complex, and frustrating process. And when you get to the point where you have reached a policy decision, you often delegate broad authority to state agencies, and you hope that what they do is engage the public in the most meaningful way possible, and you inform them with as much information, even if it's a minutia, so that agency is engaging with the public with the responsibility that you delegated them with. When I looked at the Delete All Amendment, and thank you very much for some of the advancements that were made in this bill. We saw it this afternoon, very much like we saw this bill very close to the start of session. I haven't been able to go through it with a fine-tooth comb, but one of the things that did change to be a little bit positive in our disagreement with the way that this bill's been moving is the idea that you removed out of it the expedited rulemaking process. what the bill originally said is that agencies could adopt rules that have been promulgated by government entities, which would be very much like suggesting that CSG or NCSL or ALEC could bring a model piece of legislation forward to the legislature and you could just expeditedly move it through on the consent calendar. It was a terrible idea, and so thank you for taking that out in this delete all amendment. I would like to express some concern with the SONAR, even as it's been rewritten in this bill. We think that even if it's got an abundance of information, more information is better than less, particularly since you are delegating authority to state agencies who are not elected officials. And those non-elected officials are promulgating law. So the more is better, quite frankly. And then I also want to express some concern about the fact that you're raising the threshold from 25 to 100. Comments, letters, persons. Again, it's supposed to be a very low threshold for people to be able to engage in that rulemaking process. And while it may be easy for us to rally the troops as a trade association or as a group of cities or concerned citizens who have aggregated, quite frankly, if the general public wants to engage, they really shouldn't have to rely on me to get them to get 100 signatures to be able to contest a rule and bring that forward. And I will stop with my comments and be open for any questions if you have them.
Thank you. And the next testifier at the table, please give us your name.
Madam Chair, my name is Lisa Fernette. I represent the Association of General Contractors of Minnesota. I'm not going to take a lot of everyone's time. We agree. Coming from the construction industry, we'll just agree with a do a me too with what Remy Stone just said. I would like to add one thing with the SONAR. There's a lack of transparency that we see from the public side or from a business side where the in promulgating the rule or the statement of need and reasonableness, and the ability of the agencies to decide whether or not a promulgation of a rulemaking is critical or has any sort of contention leaves us with concern, because it's important for the public to know and decide whether or not an issue is contentious or not as it moves forward.
Thank you for your testimony. And the next on the list is Elizabeth Wafel, and then after that would be Keith Carlson, if you want to come up, and we'll try to move through the testifiers as quickly as we can. Thank you for coming to the committee, and please give us your name.
My name is Elizabeth Wafel. I am a lobbyist with the firm of Flaherty & Hood. I am here to express the concerns, actually, of several clients. On the list, you see the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. They're very concerned about this, but I have several other clients who are also affected by this and are concerned. I have the Missouri River Energy Services, which is a municipal power agency that serves 24 municipal utilities in greater Minnesota. Deb Bergen, their government relations director, is with me, also very concerned about this. And I also want to speak up on behalf of a client of mine many of you have probably never heard of, the Minnesota Association of Rehabilitation Providers, which is a small organization of people that provide rehabilitation services to injured workers in the workers' compensation system. All of these folks have concerns identical or similar to what we've heard before. Everything I think that Mr. Johnson and Ms. Garlitz said regarding concerns about local government really hold true, particularly for the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. You know, we think that efficiency can be a really good goal, and we understand that there are circumstances that we want to get these rules moving forward. But we don't think that efficiency can be an overriding goal when there's other concerns, such as the impact that this is going to have on citizens' health and welfare, on their livelihoods, on taxpayer dollars. You know, a lot of these rules, particularly on some of the environmental changes when they get made, can have a really big impact on our cities. And we think it's really important that, particularly with the SONAR, that we have that detailed list of what we're looking at, and that we are making sure that we have to spell out, have you looked at less costly alternatives? Have you spent the time to, you know, spell out the cumulative effects of this, of these different regulations? And I think this, you know, again, applies across to different clients with Missouri River Energy Services. You know, they deal with, they operate in several states and are concerned about, you know, what are the cumulative effects of some of these rules with federal and state rules and so forth. Again, taking that specificity out of the SONAR, we're a little worried that some of it will get ignored. And I think you're hearing from everyone. We're all really concerned about increasing the signature requirement from 25 to 100. I noted one of the handouts that was over there. I apologize, I don't have it in front of me, like many lobbyists, too many papers. But, you know, it showed that, you know, it wouldn't be that hard to get if you've got, you know, X number of county commissioners. Oh, here you go. You know, 87 counties if you had all of your commissioners write in. I think Ms. Garlitz explained why it's really not that easy. I've also seen this with my client MARP. You know, they're a very small organization. They do some really important work. And, you know, they faced situations not under the current administration. I'll compliment, you know, Ms. Iden and the administration. It's been real great to work with over at DLI. But, you know, in the past there have been, you know, rulemakings that have affected them that for whatever reason, you know, past administrations thought weren't that controversial, you know, and that could happen again in the future. That means they have to go out now and get 100 signatures to get a hearing. MARP has about 200 members. That means I have to get 50% of their members, you know, to sign up for a hearing. That's not that easy in 30 days. Maybe I could get 25, but, you know, these numbers, different groups are going to have different people. It's not quite that easy in that short of a period of time, especially if you don't know what's coming. And again, the agency may think it's not may think something's non-controversial, but when it comes out, people realize it is. And you're leaving a lot of discretion with these agencies to figure it out. And I know they all have good intentions, but sometimes things can get missed there. And we think these protections need to remain in place. So thank you again for your time. And I also want to, as Ms. Stone said, thank you for some of the changes that have been made going through this process. But we just think that this is not something that's ready to go forward, that we really need to spend more time talking to the different stakeholders in this process before making these dramatic changes to the rulemaking process. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Mr. Carlson.
Please state
your name for the record.
Madam Chair, members, I'm Keith Carlson. I'm Executive Director of the Minnesota Intercounty Association that consists of 8 of the larger Greater Minnesota counties and 4 of the metropolitan counties. If it's not obvious to the committee by now, I just want to emphasize basically rules are where the rubber hits the road for many regulations that you have proposed by statute. The details are always spelled out by rules. The guidelines that you provide in statute is not really what matters ultimately to the regulations that are imposed on us by the executive agency. I do want to thank Senator Pappas and the executive branch for some of the changes that they have made, such as the change in Section 7 that eliminated as it was originally drafted, the 60-day notice of intent to adopt rules, and also the dropping of Section 15 that was limiting the record in front of the administrative law judge. We think these are good changes, but I strongly want to echo exactly the same that's been echoed by every testifier up here. The changes in the SONAR statement of needs and reasonableness is of great concern to us. I specifically, if you look at the stricken language in Section 12, clauses 3 through 8 are of great importance and, as Mr. Johnson said, have been created over time to force the agencies to identify alternatives, to specifically identify the costs not on the regulated entities as a whole, but individual subparts of the regulated community. For example, I'll use an example of what's called the general stormwater permit, to which cities, townships, counties, and larger governmental entities such as the University of Minnesota are subject. I'll readily acknowledge that permits are not quite the same as rules, but the process is much the same. That process of doing that, which I give credit to the agency, PCA, took over 2 years to go through, given the extent of the complication that is dealt with when rules or permits are promulgated. I also want to emphasize the extent of regulation to which we're subject. When a county or a city builds a road right now and that happens to abut or cross a water body, we're subject to four different governmental entities regulating us. The Board of Water and Soil Resources, Bowser, DNR, PCA, and also the Army Corps of Engineers at the federal level. So again, one of the provisions in here says Section 7, an assessment between the difference between the proposed rules and existing federal regulation are important to us. We question the extent of regulation that is somewhat redundant with federal regulations. I will finally conclude, we also agree that raising the threshold for a hearing from 25 to 100 is of great concern. Basically, to put it in terms that you understand, would you want to require that X number of people would be required to sign a petition before you have to have a committee hearing on a bill? Absent this process, if the agency chooses to forego it, it would essentially be the same as having a bill that's going be introduced go directly to the fourth floor for third reading. So we strongly urge you to consider dropping the change in that threshold. With that, I'll conclude. Thank you.
Thank you. And Senator Pappas.
I just forgot to mention that this is just really a small, non-controversial bill. you know, I thought that Catherine actually gave a very good explanation on having a sonar that made more sense and was more straightforward. And, Commissioner, maybe you want to come back up and talk a little bit more about what we're trying to accomplish here.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Pappas. Madam Chair, again, for the record, Catherine Usler, the supervisor of the Agency Rules Unit at the Pollution Control Agency. And I think what Mr. Johnson brought up about the sonar was, what do you really need to know? You need to know, does this rule affect you? What is it going to cost you? And I think more than that, you need to know, what are the benefits of the rule? What are the consequences of the rule? Not just monetarily, but sort of generally. You know, does it impact a federal delegation? Does it impact some other program? And then, is the rule needed and reasonable? And those three things are still absolutely in this bill. They would be done on a sonar for the vast majority of rules. They're really the heart of it. But I really think that what the agencies are looking for is the flexibility to tell a narrative about the rule that's easily understandable to the public. I've been in my position since June, and when I first got in and someone handed me a sonar to read for a bill we were proposing, it starts off with these eight questions, and I'm going, why are you telling me about this? I don't even know what the rule does. What is this? This doesn't make any sense, or this question doesn't fit with this rule. And so I think for the public having to wade through a lot of that before they get to sort of what's the rule and what is this about is difficult. And so really putting that into a more flexible format that allows the agencies to tell the story that's important to the rule that they want to do, that's really what we're driving at this point, rather than just checking out boxes that may or may not be relevant, letting the agencies choose what makes sense based on the rule that they're promulgating.
Commissioner Stein, do you have additional remarks?
I would just add, Madam Chair and members, that the agency's rulemaking processes right now last, on average, greater than 14 months. And so the concern about streamlining, I have to return to that this is not about eliminating the opportunities for the public or the affected parties to be heard. In fact, earlier you heard Mr. Johnson and Ms. Garlitz talk about how they would acquire more than 100 signatures. And the practice of all agencies that I'm aware of is that if there's a signature by five city council members or seven county commissioners, that's seven signatures. That's five signatures. I don't see that as a huge obstacle to overcome in our current times. And certainly the other point that I would make is that the contested case hearing and the public hearing process is at the end of a process. Generally, rulemaking processes start with a large conversation among stakeholders and interested parties. Mr. Carlson talked about permitting, near and dear to my heart, because I've done a lot of it in my lifetime. But I would also say that the process that is normal across state agency work now, and this is true in my experience in almost every agency, is that there's a very engaged process of notifying the citizens. That's one of the provisions that was changed in an earlier form of this bill. We kept the public notification process at the beginning of every process so that parties could know what's being proposed. We also had talked about modifying a standard of review for the for the Office of Administrative Hearings. We eliminated that provision based on the concerns of stakeholders. And then this the last thing is adopting rules in an expedited process that had been endorsed by some large national organization, like you heard some of the testifiers comment. We eliminated those concerns. The reason we're so focused on the sonar is because that's where time is chewed up. Time is chewed up without adding the quality, in our opinion. And I would say that the governor's focus, our focus on this, is in choosing well when to begin the rulemaking process and move through the rulemaking process more expediently. A controversial rule will always be a controversial rule, and it will always take time. Just like a controversial permit will always take time. There are many rules, though, that rely solely on minor modifications of language of law, conformity to federal requirements, and those should move much more quickly through the process. That's why we are still focused on modifying the expedited process, as well as keeping the sonar to a scope and a narrative, as Ms. Nuschler described, that can be understood by the public.
And Madam Chair, if I may
Thank
add, the commenters, I think, many of them sort of gave the impression that the hearing, just like the hearings here, are really the key way for them to engage in the process. And while those are a very important way and very important for controversial rules, every rulemaking, even the new expedited processes that we're proposing, have a public comment period. And we take those public comments very seriously. We review them. We respond to them. And they go, in all cases, to an administrative law judge. And if we haven't, even if there's no hearing, an administrative law judge reviews those rules. And if we haven't made our case, we haven't made our case, and the judge can tell us that, so even without a hearing.
Madam Chair, change is difficult because people get used to the way things have been done, and they reach a comfort level if they are really familiar with the rulemaking process. This is the way it's always been done. This is what I know. But if it doesn't make sense, we're just trying to make it so that it makes more sense for the public that maybe doesn't engage with rulemaking all the time.
Thank you, Senator Pappas. And there may be more people here who would like to testify. So as we go through the testifiers, and then we still have to ask for questions from committee members, but I'm wondering if the testifiers can limit the length of their testimony so that we can get a feel whether or not you're in favor of it or opposed to it, and let us know that right away and tell us who you are. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if there's anyone else in the audience who would like to testify.
Madam Chair, I know that
Senator Pappas.
We're the State and Local Government Committee, and all these local people are our friends who are here all the time and testify all the time. And we've been trying to work with them and increase their comfort level. And as the commissioner mentioned, there were a lot of changes that were made in the bill. We're kind of down now to the kind of the structure of the sonar and the number of signatures. Certainly, if our friends want to come up with alternative proposals, I for one think that there should be more weight to an elected official than just one, because we represent 10,000, 20,000, 30,000 people. I think there might be ways that are there some of these significant questions in the sonar that were eliminated that need to be brought back into the new sonar, but in a new structure so that you can do a narrative, as Catherine talked about. So, depending on the comfort level of the committee, I believe this is our last stop, right? We go to the floor from here?
Finance Committee. Finance
Committee. All right. How about if we pass out the bill tonight, we go into Finance Committee, we can still add amendments in the Finance Committee. That's one option. I really want to have a dialogue about this. The other option is that we lay the bill over tonight, and we can still bring it back up on Friday before the deadline. And that gives us a couple more days, or tomorrow anyway. We could have it in the end of the agenda on Friday to see if we might be able to accommodate some more interest. And then still we'd have another chance to do that again if everyone wasn't still. I don't think everyone is going to be totally satisfied. I just don't think that's going to happen, because there are a lot of people who want us just to keep it the way it is. And we're going to have to change it. We can't have non-controversial rulemaking taking us 8, 9, 10 months to do. We have to have a way to deal with the non-controversial rulemaking. It's just not fair to the agency. It's not fair to the public. It's not fair when we pass laws and we want things to happen to do that. So if people want to give me some indication of what you feel you'd like to do, I'll give you three options.
Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Senator Pappas, for being so gracious and opening, you know, an opportunity for us. I just want to remind ourselves that this is not a new process. It didn't come to us 3 hours ago, a day. It has been really a number of years that we've talked about this because this is a process that is very complex, very bureaucratic. In fact, we had a bill before us 3 years ago that actually got rid of the rulemaking process. And many of us who work for the state of Minnesota, I worked for the state for 16 years prior to coming here, said, we can't do that. But it was clear during that process that people were frustrated with what we have. So rather than going back and keeping the frustrating process in place and fixing it and fixing it, I would like to advise you to pass what you have and then come back and deal with the issues as they become problems. I think that this is a very reasonable step to say simpler in the rulemaking process is better. I think that the proposal 3 years ago to get rid of the rule process system was too much. It was far. We have to interpret legislation. That's what the rule process is about. But simpler is better. Less bureaucratic is better. And I think this is going to show us how that works. I really believe that having this simple process that opens an opportunity to ask a very straightforward question instead of having these lists of questions, like Catherine alluded to, you receive a list and you just get confused from the start. This is not a transparent and counterintuitive process for the public, and it needs to be. And this is a good step, and I applaud the effort. I think this is a first good step, and we will come back and review it if we created a problem. But I can guarantee you that we didn't. I participated in a rulemaking process of a rule called the Umbrella Rule to bring together all of the processes for reviewing how we license foster homes, facilities for kids and everything. It took 9 years to do a review. That is insane. I left, you know, I ran for Senate. They were still working on the rule. So I think this is a very good first step.
Any other advice to the author?
Pappas. Senator Johnson had her hand up, so maybe there's some advice there.
Yes, and I, Madam Chair and Senator Pappas, I probably missed a little bit of the opening statements to hear the discussion, but I would like to have you tell me why the jump from 25 to 100. That seems like a 25 signatures to 100 signatures, and if you tell me why that number was chosen.
Madam Chair, Senator Johnson.
Ms. Nusler.
One of the reasons that for us at the PCA that it seemed like a good threshold was it actually is in keeping with some of the thresholds for petitioning for an environmental review process. So it was a number we were already familiar with. And I think the desire to just increase the number is just the way we communicate. You know, when we say signatures, the PCA, if we get an email from a unique email address, we will count that. If it's requesting a hearing, that counts as a hearing request. And so just with that ability to mobilize people through email and through other means, rather than having them write a letter and hand sign it, we felt that it was appropriate to increase the threshold.
Right. I didn't know that. A simple email.
Mm-hmm. And
Senator Johnson.
Madam Chair. I think it's really important to give people as much opportunity as possible to be involved and to talk to government about their concerns, and that rulemaking is for doing that. And I think it's a good plan for us to have a rulemaking in place. I would not want to get rid of it. But it seems to me that maybe that number, since it concerns everybody, maybe that number could be dropped somewhere before 100. What would you think about that, Senator Pappas?
Commissioner Stein? Senator Pappas?
You know, it certainly is an option.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I would also say it's an option. However, it's normal that we receive far greater than 100 comments on virtually all things that are done. So I know that there are folks that are going to say that would be a challenge. it is not common in my experience to have that kind of a challenging circumstance to get 100 emails or 100 letters or 100 pieces of correspondence. That's rather normal.
Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'd like to comment on first the procedure from here and then the substantive issue. I mean, I think it's a kind of a – we're starting to see this. Well, let's just pass it and fix it later. I mean, this is the state government committee. This bill is in our wheelhouse. I mean, if we don't pay attention to this, there would be no other committee that would. So I think that I would be uncomfortable voting for a bill to say, well, I really don't like what I'm voting on, but we'll hope for the best in another committee. I don't think that's the way to run a legislature.
I agree. I think we have to feel Senator we're comfortable Pappas. Enough with this tonight that it would be tweaks that we would be making if we sent it out tonight.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And on the substantive issue, why do we have rulemaking? Why does it exist? It exists because it is an acknowledgement that we legislators pass laws and turn the execution of those laws over to the executive branch. That's how it works. I got Schoolhouse Rock going through my head as I'm saying this. All right, so that's what we do. But what we've determined, and by the way, some of it is by courts for constitutional reasons, is that when an agency of government is going to go out and do things to people, and please don't anyone take offense, whether you're in the legislature or in the administrative branch, the business of government is to restrict people's rights. That's what we do. The Constitution lays out all of these rights that individuals have and then gives limited powers to the federal government. Unfortunately, we don't pay attention to that, but it does. And then we have, you know, state and local governments that have power, and we are in the business of restricting people's rights. That's what we do. We take their money from them when we tax them. We regulate them when they run their businesses. We zone their housing. We do all of these things. Not all of them are bad. Most of them aren't. But rulemaking is an acknowledgement that when the legislature cedes its power to the executive branch, there better be some serious safeguards in place to protect the public so, A, they know what's going on, and, B, they can respond to it. And I am very concerned about any change in the rulemaking procedure that makes it more difficult for people to get a hearing on issues that they deem of concern or controversial. Lifting the 25 to 100 is one of those things. If you're right that it's real easy to get the 100 signatures, then there's no point in raising the number. So I'm just really concerned because, again, and this is nothing, this is not partisan. My worst experience with a regulatory agency happened when Governor Pawlenty was the governor. It's just that the executive branch is out there executing laws, and as one or more of the testifiers pointed out, really what we do here, we take a 2 or 3 page piece of legislation and reams of paper are generated in the regulatory process to enforce that law. And, boy, if the people don't have input there, it is a serious infringement on their rights and the way our system is supposed to operate. And I would hope this wouldn't be a partisan issue. I would hope that people would acknowledge that when we exercise the power of government, and it's interesting to note, not one of the people being regulated testified in favor of this. Only the people who are going to enforce it testified in favor of it. Everybody, lobbyists that are normally testifying to give government many times additional powers, are very concerned about this. That should really tell us something.
Is there anyone else on the committee who has a question or would like to give us some advice as to how this should proceed? Anyone? Anyone else in the audience that wants to comment on how this should proceed? If not, Senator Pappas?
Madam Chair, then I would just request that we lay the bill over.
Senator Pappas requests that we lay over.
But we are going to bring it back. We're going to schedule it on Friday.
Senate 4-2067 to be scheduled on our Friday, scheduled toward the end of